Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I'm joined by Graham Nichols and Mark Bentham, both pastors of Christ Church, Haywards Heath. Well, it's been a while, but it's that time once again. Cue the jingle. Ordinary.
Apologetics for the ordinary.
Broken bones and broken hearts, redundancy and bankruptcy, lost dreams and lost loved ones, disease and death. Why do bad things happen to good people? The so-called problem of evil is cited as one of the biggest obstacles to faith in the Western world. And that's why it's crucial for us Christians to have our heads on straight when it comes to this topic. We need to be ready to give an answer for the hope that we have and to be equipped to deal with suffering in our own lives. So let's get into it and I'll catch you on the other side.
Hello, my name's Graham Nichols.
And I'm Mark Bentham.
And I'm Josh Bannister and you're listening to Ordinary. This is an apologetics episode, so the reins get passed over to my competent colleague, Mr. Mark Bentham, to host this one a little bit.
Great. So today we're going to be thinking about the apologetics, the problem of evil, or how we talk about that with our non-Christian friends. And we recognise this is a hard topic to think through and where we'll end up. But hopefully, as we talk it through, there'll be some gems for you to be able to talk. So Graham's going to kick us off. Then Josh is going to give us the first kind of logical argument. And then we're going to throw that around and see where we go and come back to another logical argument, throw that around, and then end up with some, hopefully...
Responses.
Mm-hmm. But stay tuned, because it's probably the most common question in some form or other that you'll be asked as a Christian. Mm. And it's the one you've got to at least think about an answer to. You won't have all the answers to it, because there are mysteries in it all, but to at least have some kind of basic landing points is really important as a Christian, I think.
So this is probably not the podcast to listen to whilst you're driving your car. Because someone said to me, these are the only ones where they can't do anything else. They have to sit down and focus.
Oh, wow. That's good that they're having to engage.
So, and this one particularly, you're going to have to switch in, but it'd be good. Because it's an important issue, as you say.
I mean, sometimes it comes at a personal level where someone's just suffering and they want to ask you, you know, why is God letting this happen? And we're not particularly going to deal with the kind of emotional aspects. You know, there's a lot the Bible has to teach us about empathizing and understanding the wretchedness of life at times and crying out to God in that. So we're not going to deal with that. We're going to deal with more the kind of intellectual arguments, which are not always the right things to say in the midst of suffering. There are other things to think about in the midst of suffering, and particularly remembering Christ and what he did for us.
But it's super helpful to split them up, like you just said, because oftentimes people's questions are quite muddled. Yes. And so it's good to split them up in this forum so that we can just get some really detailed look at what we could say. But you're absolutely right to say that that's not always appropriate.
Yeah, and people are, in the right way, people are not always entirely logical. So they might say, this is really cruel that you know, my mum died when she was 77. And you have to say, well, why is that worse than her dying when she was 87? And people have, you know, strange things that they're not struggling with God's providence when they hit their thumb with a hammer by mistake, but they will do when they have a car accident. So, but actually it's the same, logically it's exactly the same. You know, why did God allow any suffering to happen?
It's the same question.
And so it's the same question, but people won't, there's an emotional content to the car accident that's not there with the thumb hit, even though it's the same question. The question comes to us in lots of ways. It could be personally through suffering. It could be just, like someone recently asked me, you know, did God originate evil? They were just grappling with the problem. They weren't particularly doubting it. They were just trying to sort of understand it. And I think one thing before we get into the stuff we're going to talk about is just to recognize our limits. So we're definitely not experts, us three here. But I think as human beings, we're not experts. By definition, we're not experts because we're not God. And our vantage point is looking up at God and looking round at the world. We don't have the vantage point of God. We don't understand what it would possibly be like to simultaneously survey the whole of history, the whole of the mind of everybody, to control everything. It's just too much for us to comprehend. We also don't have the moral superiority to look down on God and say, okay, I both understand it all intellectually, but also morally, I can judge whether what you're doing is good or evil. So I think there has to be kind of humility. But I think God has made us with minds able to grapple with these kind of questions. And so I think it's good for us to do that, but always to recognise there is a limit to how far we can go. So that's what I'd say by way of introduction.
And just to add to that introduction a tiny bit, I think it's also important to wrestle through this as Christians, not only because we're called to be ready to give an answer for the hope that we have. And oftentimes the problem of evil is cited as one of the biggest obstacles to belief and faith in the Western world and in our time. Yeah. But secondly, because the Bible tells us to expect suffering in our own lives. So it's good to equip ourselves in times of not suffering, if it's on the intellectual side, so that maybe we have the apparatus or the understanding to deal with that and wrestle with that in those times. So 1 Peter says, "Beloved, don't be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you as though something strange were happening to you, but rejoice insofar as you share Christ's suffering so that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed." So it's going to happen in the life of the believer that we will face trials and suffering. So it's great to kind of work through those things, and it can give you the ability to deal with it in the moment.
And Don Carson would say that. Don Carson, theologian, says, you know, make sure you've done your thinking on suffering when you're not suffering, because it's impossible to do your thinking on suffering when you're in the midst of it, because the emotions take over. Mm-hmm. So you can't think rationally. You're unable to kind of work it through in the detail you need to. But actually, as you rightly say, having that robust thinking before you hit suffering will massively pay dividends in the midst of suffering in terms of your spiritual life and moving forward. Mm-hmm. So let's move it on. Let's now think about, okay, so what are the arguments? So what are you going to do? Give us the kind of common logical kind of thinking that people express. And you've probably heard something of this if you've been talking with non-Christian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So the question would be, why does God allow suffering? Is that the question you want to answer?
Yeah. And it kind of can take two forms. It can take a logical version or a probability version.
Yeah.
The logical version we'll deal with really quickly because it's very easy to break that down. The probability version is more of a challenge for us. But the logical version kind of runs something like this. It says, if God is all powerful, then he is able to remove all suffering from the world. Premise two, if God is all loving, then he should prefer a world with no suffering. Premise three, however, the world is full of suffering. So conclusion, therefore, God does not exist.
Yeah.
That's the logical version.
Well, presumably a slight twist is that it's not that God doesn't exist, he's a horrible God.
Yeah.
Could unloving.
Be. Yeah. He's a horrible or limited in power.
Limited, impotent kind of God. Yeah.
So the proponent of this argument, whoever's giving this argument, is kind of claiming that it's logically impossible for God and evil to coexist.
Yeah.
So if God existed, evil wouldn't exist. Evil does exist, therefore God can't.
Yep.
That's the argument. So I think that we can dismiss this quite quickly, but I don't know if you want to speak into that, Graham.
No, I think you can go for it.
Shows how you're going to dismiss it quickly.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So basically, whoever's kind of pushing this argument has a big burden of proof to show that God couldn't have morally sufficient reasons to allow suffering in the world.
Yeah.
Okay. And for all the people that have pushed this argument, nobody has ever been able to carry that load or show or produce some kind of hidden premise that shows that God couldn't have morally sufficient reasons to allow suffering in the world. So to illustrate the idea of morally sufficient reasons, I'll maybe just give a little analogy.
What's your analogy?
My analogy is going to be a soldier in a war who sees an oncoming attacker prepared to blow up his entire platoon. And imagine that soldier takes the decision in that moment to fire a shot and kill that oncoming suicide bomber or attacker before he's able to fire the explosive or set the explosive. Could we ever say that it's good to kill another human being? Probably not. Surely not. But we appreciate that the soldier had morally sufficient reasons to end that man's life in that moment with that bullet. So that tries to give an analogy to what morally sufficient reason might be.
Yeah, and in one sense, so the soldier is doing something that is for the good of others, uh-huh. and yet there is a sense of there's a suffering that is caused to that person who is shot.
Yeah.
I often use the illustration of the baby, you know, like parents. Yeah. if you scaled it down, the video sense of a needle going into the arm of a baby and the baby's reaction of screaming and shouting, you'd go, that's horrific. Why would you cause your baby to suffer in such a way? Of course, you scale it out, and what you see, actually, this is in a doctor's surgery, and you're inflicting that harm in order for the good of the child. So we do it in our own lives. You don't need to be a soldier. We do this kind of
all the time
for the good of others or for the good of those around.
Yeah.
All the time.
And I don't know whether you're going to say this now, but with this moral argument, I know people sometimes kind of stumble on it and they think, yeah, but I haven't got the morally sufficient answer. And I think you've got to say, we only need to prove that it's possible. You don't have to say what the answer is.
Yeah.
Yes.
You have to prove that it's possible there is a morally sufficient answer for the presence of evil, for God permitting the devil to do what he did, for Adam and Eve to do what they did, for us to do what we've done. For him to permit that, you only have to say, is it possible there's a morally sufficient reason?
Yeah.
Not, what is it?
Yeah, absolutely right.
Because God hasn't chosen to reveal entirely what it is. We can speculate on some things, and it's sometimes helpful to do that, but we don't. And I think people sometimes get stuck on that because they say, yeah, I kind of get the idea, but what is the reason then?
Yeah.
It's a little bit of logical work. This is the person who's going to now stop in a lay-by to listen to this bit. You only have to prove that it's possible.
That it's possible.
There's a moral sufficient.
And with our analogies, we've kind of shown that that happens in our experience of life all the time.
Absolutely.
There's plenty of morally sufficient reasons to cause harm sometimes, or something that hurts or painful is suffering.
And do we talk about the cross now, or do you want to talk about the cross later?
I haven't got anything on the cross now. If you want to, that's fine.
I think that's helpful because the child stabbing with a needle, the other thing's good, but it's always helpful to look at the cross and say, at the cross, tragic evil happened to someone who didn't deserve it. Was there a morally sufficient reason for God to do that? Yes, there was, because he proclaimed and sustained his character of holiness and love at one moment, supremely demonstrated at the cross. So there can be suffering for a purpose, and for a good purpose, and for an ultimately better purpose that wouldn't have happened if the suffering hadn't happened. So you've got those other analogies which are helpful to kind of ground it in our own experience. But then when you look at the cross, you say, there can be suffering for a purpose. So if it's possible for God to bruise his own son for a good purpose, it's possible for God to orchestrate the whole of history for good purpose, even though there are ragged, wretched bits in it.
Absolutely.
And if you want a kind of a Bible place to go, Acts 2:23-24 is a really good place if you're in discussing this with a non-believer, of this man Christ was handed over to you by God's deliberate plan and foreknowledge. You, with the help of wicked men, put him to death, but God raised him.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you see men's evil, but God using it for good.
Yeah.
Perfect. So absolutely right. So we merely need to push forward the argument that it's at least possible that God could have morally sufficient reasons to allow the evil and suffering in the world. And in doing that, the mere possibility kind of refutes the argument on the logical argument. But then we come to a slightly more challenging argument, which is the probability argument, which is more challenging because it has a more sort of humble claim. It's not so solid.
Just before you do that, just because I find it quite helpful thinking about those premises, that the problem with those premises for the previous one is that they're not sufficiently qualified. So because they say, if God is all powerful, if God is all loving, and evil exists, you know, they're assuming that it's an all powerful, all loving God couldn't have good purposes. So I think, as well as making the argument that you've got to prove it's possible, it is also sometimes, even as people are articulating it, to say, we're not able to judge what are God's good purposes. So actually going back to the premises, even though people might not put it in exactly the form that you put, you know, premise one, premise two, and so on. But just to go back and say, no, there's something wrong with actually what you're assuming, because you're assuming that you have the capacity to understand what is good. So you're taking God is all loving and God is all powerful and bad stuff happens. The bad stuff happens premise is where it all goes wrong. Because you're assuming you understand entirely the nature of badness, and you have decided, but you haven't put that in your premise, that there couldn't possibly be any good purpose in badness. So that's where it breaks down. Does that help just to add that?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Sorry, it's just I've had to think
that's
about
okay.
this quite
that's
a
okay.
lot recently.
Just for time, we should probably go for the next one.
Yeah, go for it. It's good.
Okay, so probability runs like this. There is premise one, there is a great deal of suffering and evil in the world. Premise two, it's unlikely that God could have morally sufficient reasons for permitting this suffering and evil in the world. Conclusion, therefore, God probably does not exist. So it's more difficult to refute because it has a far more humble conclusion that God probably doesn't exist based on the amount of suffering and evil in the world, the extent of and the depth of the evil that we see. It's unlikely that a good, loving God exists. Okay, so it's harder to deal with, but we've got, I think, 3, 4, 5 good responses to that kind of argument. So should we start running through those?
Or yeah,
go for it.
Okay. So the first response would be something like this, which I think we've already touched on, that we are not in a good position to assess the probability of whether or not God has morally sufficient reasons for allowing suffering and evil in the world.
Yeah,
we're not, like Graham said at the beginning, we don't have a good vantage point on this to assess it. And there's a couple of illustrations just to help understand that a little bit. So let's talk about first chaos, the idea of chaos theory. It's part of mathematics that looks at systems that are very sensitive, things like the weather. And the whole idea of this is that we are very bad at predicting the weather because very small minor changes result in vastly different outcomes. So the example of the butterfly fluttering its wings in a jungle in West Africa could produce a ripple effect through history that would lead to a hurricane over the Atlantic Ocean. And yet no one looking at that little butterfly flapping its wings could ever predict such an outcome. This is chaos theory. It's a scientific theory that we are bad in these systems at predicting outcomes because such small minor events have such outcomes that we could never predict, even in our own world. Another good illustration from kind of popular culture is the film Sliding Doors. I don't know if either of you have seen it, with Gwyneth Paltrow. Where she's this woman and the film splits into two stories. One where she makes it onto this train. She's rushing to get this, catch this train. One where she makes it and one where she doesn't make it onto this train. And there's two stories kind of become increasingly divergent. And in one of the lives, she's really happy and successful and she has a good life. And in the other life, she's miserable and her life is kind of characterized by disappointment, suffering, and failure. And it all happens because of this seemingly trivial event of whether or not she made it onto that train that morning, right? And the point is that, again, seemingly unimportant events can have a huge consequence for us that, in our limited viewpoint, we could never predict. They're unpredictable to us.
Have you seen Adjustment Bureau?
Have I seen?
Adjustment Bureau.
No.
I think it's not a similar film. Basically, have you seen it?
No.
These angels, sort of, come down and they adjust things that have gone slightly out of God's plan, is the theory. Okay. So they have like a kind of an underground map type thing on a tablet in front of them. And they kind of work out, okay, that guy went through the wrong door. We need to actually divert him slightly. Right. So they these kind of angels go underground and they come out in other places and they sort of push him back and say, that bit went wrong. But the film's really good at illustrating the same point, but on a bigger scale. It's not just one event, not just the one Sliding Doors event of Gwyneth Paltrow. They're trying to control like hundreds of events all across the world.
Yeah.
And you get to realise that quite the same thing. Trivial decisions as to whether you go through that door or that door make a massive difference in the end to life.
And the twist comes at the end of the film because you suddenly you get the revelation that in the life that was successful and that she was really happy and enjoying things, suddenly she's killed in an accident. And in the life that was characterized by misery and pain and disappointment and struggle, things turn around and it happens to be the better and happier life after all through the suffering. And so the point is that similarly, we might be able to say something like this, that it may be that a brutal murder or a child dying of leukemia or something of that level of suffering might have a ripple effect through history such that God's morally sufficient reasons for allowing it might not emerge until years later or even in a different country. And we are just, when you think about God's providence over the whole of human history, you can just, I think, appreciate how limited and unable we are to make probability judgments on whether or not God had morally sufficient reasons to allow this or that instance of suffering or evil. We just don't have the ability to make those probability judgments.
Yeah.
So that's response one.
Yeah.
Okay. There's 4 more responses on this.
Yeah, but we don't have to run through them all. The next one's quite important too. So if we just hit 2 or 3, that's fine. Are there any questions or thoughts on that?
No, go for it.
Okay.
No.
So, Graham, I'll let you speak into the second one. But the second response would be that the main purpose of life is not happiness, but to know God.
Yeah.
So how does that affect how we see suffering and whether that's probable or not?
I think it's that center of the universe thing that the biblical view would be that everything exists for the glory of God. So our judgments about is this a good thing that's happening needs to be based on, does it bring glory to God? Does it honor God? Where we start from is, does it suit me? Is it nice to me? And so we're asking God to say, give me a reason why that suffering happened for me to like you. And if you can't give me a reason, then I won't like you anymore. But more than that, it's not even just give me a reason. Give me a reason that satisfies me and makes it all right for me. And there is some degree of humility that we say, actually, I'm here to serve God. I'm here for the glory of God. So the definition of good is, does it glorify God? Mm-hmm. Now, the brilliant qualifier of that is that because God is good, in the end, good will come out of it and it will be good for his people. But we still start from the premise that the glory of God is more important than my glory. And that kind of changes how you define good and how you view things. So that's part of the answer.
So it kind of comes down to undermining the presupposition that God's job is to create a nice environment for his human pets.
Yeah, you have a pet analogy in something that you wrote that I thought was really helpful.
Yeah, and I guess the point is on the Christian view that's false. That's not God's job. His job is not to sit up there in the sky and make a nice little habitat for us to live in. His actual goal for humanity is to come into relationship with him to find fulfillment and joy and ultimate, you know, eternal life in him.
The thing about the pet analogy, which I thought was really helpful, was that although he doesn't make a nice environment for us as pets, in a way, there is a good analogy about pets to say, you know, a working gun dog, for example, does exist for the glory and benefit of their owner.
Right.
Their purpose in life is not to just eat and reproduce and have a nice life, is to fulfill their purpose, which is to go and fetch, you know, game or whatever that's been shot. And when they're doing that, the fun thing is they're actually glorifying the owner, but they're also fulfilling their purpose and having lots of fun.
Christian hedonism is what Piper would call that.
Yeah.
But it's worth just saying on that because
I got really into that. I
think I can imagine. Yeah, but the non-Christian would then go, "Well, yeah, that's very egocentric of God. You know, why is it all about him?"
Yeah.
And of course, then you are that at the end of the day, if God is who he says he is and he is the creator and his glory is the ultimate, there is nothing higher. At the end of the day, you can't, he has to serve that because otherwise there'd be something above him.
Yeah.
And so his glory is ultimate.
But God's glory is.
Preach it, brother.
God's glory is wonderfully found in us finding our full fulfillment and joy in him.
Amen.
So it's one and the other. So it's these two things aren't separate. It's not like saying, but it's selfish of God, but it's like, but that's not true because God's glory is actually in us being fully fulfilled and happy in him.
Yeah.
So it's both.
Absolutely.
And I think, so just to bring this back to the probability argument, how does this help us? What we're saying is essentially lots of evils might occur that are completely pointless in bringing about the goal of human happiness. Okay, you could make that argument completely fair. They don't bring about human happiness, but they may not be pointless in respect of their bringing about the knowledge of God. Whether it be in us or in other people. So it's notable that human suffering overwhelmingly brings about the need for trust in God, either for the first time or in a deeper way. That is just experientially true for the human race. And this is what C.S. Lewis calls God's megaphone to the world. That's why he calls suffering God's megaphone to the world, is because that's in those times we seek out for God. So these evils, they're pointless in bringing about happiness, but they're not pointless in bringing about a relationship with God. And that's what actually life is about. So that's the second one.
Yep.
Okay. Let's think how much time we got left. Let's have a look. A few minutes. Okay. 5 minutes or so.
Come on.
Another factor that should be into this equation of probability is that mankind rebelled against God and his good purposes. So that affects things. Do you want to speak into that?
No, I think you need to say a few more words and then I'll
speak. Yeah, it's just very simple. The idea that actually this is not a level playing field. So rather than trust and submit to God's good plans, we've actually rebelled against God and gone our own way.
Yeah.
So a lot of the horrible human evils in the world are testimony to how fallen we are, to how far away from God's good purposes we've gone.
And in all honesty, the very question is actually revealing that actually I think I am in the place of God and can therefore decree what is good and right and how the world should be, because I think I know best.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's what I sometimes call the local argument, which is actually the answer to suffering is to do with the fact that it's a broken world and it's a sinful world. And although that doesn't necessarily answer the massive philosophical question of why did God permit that, it does answer the question of why did it happen.
Yes.
It happened because the world's broken, because I'm broken.
Yes.
There are broken world consequences, like disasters happen, sickness and sadness happens. There are even more local answers, I might call them, which is a tyrannical leader creates a famine in a country.
Yeah.
The evil of someone in the school playground, you know, thumps me and gives me a nosebleed.
Yeah.
You know, the cause is that person.
Yeah.
So there are lots of local reasons in terms of our sin and rebellion that are in some ways a sufficient answer for some people, because it's just kind of, you just need to get your head around that.
World. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So God permits this sin. I would say as a result of human free decision, whether you place that before the fall or after or whatever.
Yeah.
And in the end, that sin only serves to increase our guilt before God. And it shows us of our need of cleansing and forgiveness.
I'm going
to
keep pushing you on now. And
ultimately, though, it reveals the glory of God.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So then let's go to the last thing, which is more of a pastoral, I suppose, Christian doctrine, that knowing God is infinitely good. So how does that help or affect our view of God and suffering?
I think it means that, again, coming back to how we value suffering, we talk about it to do with the glory of God. We also say, okay, what's the best thing that could happen to me? Not that I'm healthy and happy and rich.
Yeah.
It's that I know God.
Yeah.
So I can look at even this suffering and say, you know, it brought me to know God better. And there are loads of examples, and we haven't got time to give them, but loads of examples I've experienced where evil has happened, and that has helped bring people closer to God.
Yeah. So I think that's absolutely right. So that the Christian, remarkably, can still say, as Paul does, that even in the worst suffering, the Christian can truly say, it's well with my soul.
Yeah.
There's still good. There is still reason to praise. There's still reason to have joy. And alongside that, I think really important, we've already spoken about the cross and about Jesus, but that we have a great high priest who is familiar with suffering, that he meets us in that need, and he knows what it feels like emotionally, physically, mentally, spiritually. He understands when we're suffering. And that is such an important thing, because the Christian conception of God gives us a close God, a father, a brother, and not a far off God who doesn't really stay in touch with how we're feeling. So that, again, is the only thing we can cling to oftentimes in suffering. So knowing God is infinitely good.
Infinitely good, who shared in suffering with us, and who therefore, you know, knows what it is as we feel. And it is that holding on to that ultimate goodness, though, isn't it? That actually, I think Joni Erickson Tada, who is quadriplegic and has been for years, says, God permits what he hates to achieve what he loves.
Yeah.
And it's holding on to that goodness that actually God allows, permits these things ultimately for what he loves, because fundamentally he is good and will do what is good and achieve what is good.
Absolutely. Amen. Thanks for listening to this episode of Ordinary. We have some great podcasts lined up for you over the coming week, so I thought I'd give you a little taster of some of the topics that are coming up. We are talking about how Christians can approach retirement and use those years in a productive and kingdom-focused way. We have a podcast all about The Antidote, which is Lion of Judah's brand new EP releasing on the 31st of January. That one is with special guest me. And then we have an even more special guest, Chap Bettis, on the podcast, talking all about his book, Disciple Making Parent. Some really helpful insights from Chap on parenting. We do love to hear from you, so if you have questions around today's topic, the problem of evil, or suggestions for future topics and guests, keep sending them in. And finally, if you have been enjoying Ordinary, then why not give us a review? You can leave a rating, and we'd love it if you were to share the podcast with your friends and family. See you next time.